Welcome to Innovation Game Changers, the podcast for leaders and business owners who are hungry for achieving their vision faster than their current strategy allows. Your hosts, Elia Harris, that's me, and Dee Claxton,
that's me,
help you unpack the common factors that inhibit and advance innovation. In this episode, we're going to get you out of being afraid of innovation. Yes, innovation is risky, but as Peter Drucker said, so is not innovating. So today, we're going to talk about the hidden benefits of innovation and the things you might not think of when assessing whether to go down the innovation path. So Dee, get us started on this topic of hidden benefits of innovation.
Oh, thank you, Elia, for that. And yeah, I am so ready to jump in to share this. Dear leadership, there are so many hidden benefits of innovation that are not typically understood. Some of those benefits include cost savings for your organizations and projects, meeting business requirements, and streamlining processes, as well as continuous improvement measures. So for cost savings, the benefits are mostly long-term impacts to your bottom line over time. So generally, don't expect to see that benefit a month or 2 months after implementing innovative measures. However, be in it for the long haul and the organization's sustainability to realize oftentimes those cost savings, but well worth the effort. Staying ahead of the competition. Being disruptive can be a bad thing in school, right? But in industries and in the marketplace, it can be a game changer, as well as open innovation. Collaborations are significant in cost reduction. You work with other organizations that have core values that you don't have. You come together. You're spending less money to bring those skill sets to the table. You work as a team and you produce a product. Sticking to your core values and perfecting your cores helps to make all the difference in all of these areas that I've just pointed out. So leaders, save cost, help meet business requirements, and streamline processes.
Good points, Dee. Thanks. Another area where there are hidden benefits is how innovation builds teams and manager effectiveness. One of the best ways to get people working together is by solving a common problem, because challenges generate excitement. And brainstorming, when done properly, has many moments of fun and laughter. And laughter, as you know, reduces tension and brings people together. There's also an effect on culture. As teams learn to work together, there's a shift from the mindset of fight, defend, ignore, to know, like, and trust each other. And staff will feel more involved and motivated knowing that their voice is being heard. Now, looking at it from a manager's point of view, it's easier to delegate projects to your team because they're actually eager to be involved in finding an exciting solution when they know how to effectively brainstorm. And also for managers, by solving problems creatively, you get kudos from your managers and other leadership figures. And as a new middle-level manager, and there are a lot of you out there at the moment with the great resignation and you're moving into interim management roles, or maybe you've moved to a new company as a new manager, I remembered how tough it was being a middle-level manager, because sometimes it feels like you're caught between a rock and a hard place. You're responsible to your team and to your senior executives. Dee, can you relate to that?
Absolutely can, Elia. I too remember being a middle-level manager, and it was awkward in that you're in the middle, you know, and I'm not a middle-of-the-road type of gal. You know, I like to take positioning, and I love outcomes and results, and so it was a challenge to name one of them, of the many that I experienced. Yeah,
it's definitely overwhelming. And so I want to take a couple of minutes to look at situations where creative problem solving supported getting out of that overwhelm that comes from being a manager. One case study in particular, and this is from my own experience, major change is very typical of producing overwhelm. everyone feels nervous and uncertain when there's major change on the horizon. They worry that they may not have a job anymore or how their responsibilities will change. And yet you all still have a job to do, right? And this happened to me when I was working at a large international nonprofit. A reorganization was announced. My manager was fed up and he left, and I was promoted to interim manager of a team of 10. We supported each other in ways that we knew for how to deal with the uncertainty. And my way of supporting this team was to lay down the challenge of coming up with a new fundraising event. We determined the target audience and I led a couple of brainstorming sessions. And I'm so pleased that the result was an innovative team building event for corporate supporters that was also educational. It highlighted the physical and the mental challenges that poor people in developing countries deal with every day. The event was a huge success and also generated a significant amount of sponsorship, PR, and post-event revenue. And this is just a small example, but think about if you were a middle-level manager at the time when the pandemic really hit and the amount of change that went on there. Dee, can you imagine being a middle-level manager in a pharmaceutical company at that time?
Absolutely not.
So that was one example of how major change can produce overwhelm and a way to get over it. And Dee, I know you want to talk about building organizational effectiveness using innovation to improve things. So take us off on that path.
I will. Thank you, Elia. But if I may just chime in a bit on the change management piece around being in that middle level manager's role. First, I'd like to say congrats to you for coming up with a creative solution to find ways to work around the uncertainty. You grabbed your team and you implemented great strategy, in my opinion, to help your team move through that level of uncertainty. So that's a big, major deal.
Thank you for that, Dee.
Absolutely, yes, when we're looking at change management. And thanks for sharing that. Very powerful stuff. So yeah, I'd love to talk about building organizational effectiveness. Continuous improvement. That is a big deal. Continuous improvement, right? Because innovation is often a driving force for finding ways to do things differently and better. So just imagine when someone gets a brand new car or a house. You look good, you feel good, you smell good, and it's a bit refreshing, right? At least for a while. Well, this cliche is no different with organizations. So generally, when one is scouting out ways to build confidence and effectiveness in your service offerings or your organization overall, you may want to look for ways to be innovative. It can be as simple as a simple cost-effective innovation or just a big deal or more robust refresher. Another thing to consider is reduction in inefficiencies, right? So doing things better, meeting technological advances, looking at all legal requirements relating to any of the project, program, or portfolio is critical. Getting out front with that, not waiting till there's an involuntary external force to make these changes, and just keeping on the course to reduce cost and a whole lot more pain as well, you know, heartaches, right? And customers' improved experience overall, right? That's core. For most companies, particularly I know with Amazon, Amazon has a cliche that they are customer obsessive, right? And so with that in mind, their operating model certainly puts the customer first. And so I would imagine they're always looking for ways to improve their customer experiences. And these are some of the ways that will certainly help to support that effort. And anyone knows that I stand for implementation of effective processes. And that's partly because having them in place, it's clear from my experience that you will save time and money. But not only that, it also helps to limit liability and risk in addition to improving the customer experience and overall drive the goals. In project management, agile planning is gaining traction. Practicality and processes have had to keep up with the technology and best practices. as well as continuous improvement.
Yeah, I want to pick up on that because you raise a couple of interesting points. We're in a time of rapid change, and that change is not just to do with technology, but with the effect of various crises on us. We mentioned COVID earlier. We have to respond quickly. And I mentioned earlier that having a common, urgent challenge brings people together. And what you said illustrates that we need both ideas and structure when it comes to innovation. If we don't have the structure, we can be in outer space forever, playing with all these wonderful ideas, but we're not getting very far. We're not getting things done. We're not implementing anything. Whereas when you have structure, whether it's agile or lean or anything else, you have guide rails, you have boundaries. You know what you can and can't do in relation to, you know, who to report to, or does it match the organization's mission? And it actually saves a lot of time, because when you know what the structure is, when it's spelled out for you in the form of a framework or a system, you're not constantly thinking, okay, well, what do I do next? So structure frees your mind up to actually focus on the important things. So I love the way we ended up with two different angles of what innovation involves, because they're both important.
One drives the other. Another hidden benefit of innovation is that it's easier to adapt to emerging trends and pivot quickly when you have that framework in place to utilize that sort of strategy. For instance, with global warming, looking at a couple of case studies here, let's talk about it. Elia, I know this is your thing around global warming, so will you help illustrate this effort here that innovation is super important when we're talking about issues and things like global warming?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm very passionate about the state of the planet, and so I keep on top of what's happening in terms of regulations. And COP26, which took place in November 2021, is a really good example of this. There is an argument for having manufacturers voluntarily comply, but it's not the best motivator. And it may feel onerous, but I think we've learned over the centuries that regulations are actually a good thing. They provide a target, and it means that there's no excuse for not beginning to plan for meeting those regulations. So within COP21, here's an example. If everyone had access to clean, affordable energy, the journey to a carbon neutral world would happen more quickly. And that's why the United Nations launched a global roadmap. And the roadmap provides milestones for the transition to net zero emissions by 2050. For example, one of the milestones is for 2025 for 1 billion more people to have access to clean cooking solutions. Now, this may sound like a big number, but it's really important because the fuel that's used for cooking over an open fire in developing countries is wood or coal or sometimes dung. And this produces an incredible amount of indoor air pollution, so much so that it causes 2 million deaths every year in children under 5. To me, that's just unconscionable.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
And here's another case study in the Philippines, which happens to be one of the world's top plastic polluters. They decided to take the challenge of reducing the amount of plastic in their environment. So they are actually converting discarded shopping bags and plastic packaging into construction materials for building roads. So that's recycled roads, folks. If other cities, states, and countries adopted this technology, can you imagine how much plastic we'd be able to recycle in just 1 year?
Absolutely.
Dee, we were talking earlier about one project that you were working on previously with the U.S. Department of Energy. Is that right?
Yeah. I remember during a contract with the U.S. Department of Energy, there was a big deal issue around a failed wind energy project. And so that project was primarily at that time, there was a lot of studies and testing going on with wind turbines in places like Alaska and other rural country areas. And unfortunately, there was a lot of opposition from the coal industry for that project. And so hearing about the roads being created out of plastic, I would only imagine what the outcome would look like here in the U.S. if that were to be a project or study conducted here. And one of the big deal clashes, I believe, with the wind turbines came from, again, the coal industry, right? Which we all know that coal has its share of environmental issues and a lot of other issues, right? So it just makes sense that we move in the direction of clean energy options. And so it's unimaginable and sometimes to even think that that project was not supported more widely. And I just wanted to throw that in there because of the conversation that you had around global warming. It all ties in, right, to that effort in combating that issue.
And it raises the point about something that we don't often think about when it comes to innovation, which is winning over stakeholders.
Absolutely. Yes. Super important.
And yeah. I suspect that in the Philippines, they did a better job of that than they did in the U.S. with the coal industry. And, you know, maybe it was that point in time or whatever, but it's so crucial for leaders to be able to have those conversations, those productive conversations with stakeholders. So that's another conversation for another time.
I could go down another path in my logic and thinking around why that could have been a failed project.
Yeah. I feel another episode coming on to talk about stakeholders and who the customer really is. So we'll delve into that at another time. I think that could be an interesting conversation. But back to the business at hand. Dee, what are some other examples of emerging trends that we're dealing with?
So there's one that I really, really am super curious about. And it's the digital business card.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so there's a digital business card and there's a paper business card. And my question to our listeners is, how many of us are still using paper business cards, and particularly with working remotely? Because over the last several years, dealing with the pandemic, a lot of folks have been working remotely. Has that shifted the mindsets and the practices for business owners, for leaders to look into, you know, utilizing that new technology? So has the crossover really happened there? Are we headed in this direction full speed or cautiously? But when you think about it, it could be a better option for the environment. It may be less costly than paper business cards. These are all, for me, questions that I yet do not have the answer to, because I too have not made that switch. I'm not quite like a laggard who it takes me until I'm forced to switch over to those sorts of new emerging trends. If I go run into enough colleagues and others that say, hey, you're still using business, you know, paper business cards, then maybe over time it'll sink in and then I'll make that switch, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not an early adopter either. So I'm with you there. It's interesting to see how people handle change. I mean, this is one small change, but there's so many different levels of that, aren't there?
There are. You know, and when you look at that, again, the digital business card for marketing purposes, right? And for the purpose of having a business card, it seems that it would be much easier to retrieve that contact information from those cards if they're digitally, you know, inputted into your system. And so I can see a lot of benefit and best uses of moving into the digital business card. So just super interesting and curious to see what the audience thoughts are around that. And please add your comments in the comments section below. Let us know your thoughts or where you are in that new emerging trend.
And what about in food?
So there's another case study that was done with Dunkin' Donuts. It was a rebranding exercise, and the exercise really was Dunkin' simplifying their name, which is now Dunkin', right? Formerly Dunkin' Donuts, to Dunkin'. And so what I find interesting about that is that it's a rebranding effort, but I also see it as innovative in a lot of ways. And also, I don't believe that mainstream has probably really caught on to the name change, or if they have, it's that operant condition that we we still reference it as Dunkin' Donuts. I know I do, at least. I grew up on Dunkin' Donuts, and even though I know it's now Dunkin', I still say Dunkin' Donuts. And I don't know about you, Elia, but I've got to recondition my mind and my, you know, when I just know I'm going for coffee, because that's my go-to for coffee, mm-hmm. I'm going to Dunkin' and not Dunkin' Donuts. But in the event, what I think that makes this innovative is that there's a bigger path forward for the company. And so this whole rebranding of simplifying the name, is their strategy, probably a good business strategy, if you will, to allow them for scaled growth beyond the product lines that they're offering, because Dunkin' Donuts at one time was just coffee and donuts, but now we see the introduction of breakfast foods. So what's next, right? And that's TBD. We don't know that quite yet, but apparently this is a part of that innovative strategy for the business that will lead us to likely seeing maybe new business lines or products to come.
Yeah. And I can think of another example along those lines. Angie's List is now Angie. So I think that the trend is shorter names. I think it's also a sign of the times, you know, everything is moving faster. So if we can cut out one word, I need coffee, meet me at Dunkin', instead of I need coffee, meet me at Dunkin' Donuts. It saves one more word for us.
With the shortening of the word, that is a trend.
There are also bigger trends in rebranding, and it can sometimes signal that a company is doing it because they want to be seen as an innovator. And Facebook has always been considered an innovator anyway. They're now known as Meta because they want to get into the virtual reality sphere as well. So that's an example of a big branding change that's being driven by innovation.
Absolutely. And so thanks. I'm glad you pointed out those other rebranding efforts and how it certainly helped me a bit more of how you tie something like a rebranding effort into innovation. It makes sense.
And we also wanted to touch on some hidden benefits for society as well. It's not just about organizations. Here's one that I wanted to give an example of something that is not a benefit for society, but it could be considered an innovation. It's just too silly for words. As people get more proficient in solving problems creatively, we are going to see more innovative solutions that tackle real problems. There are still those vanity projects, though, that don't actually add value. And one of those is the Hoverbrella. And this is their pitch. Let's be honest, holding up an umbrella, whether it's raining or hot, can be a pain. In comes the Hoverbrella, a hands-free umbrella that follows you wherever you go. The Hoverbrella works by attaching a basic umbrella to a small drone which hovers over your head. Now you can enjoy a sunny or rainy day without having to worry about holding an umbrella up. Really?
Yeah. See, this is probably where I would be a laggard again, right? Really a laggard. Just not ready for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Not even within my sphere of consciousness, but it was so stupid. I just had to share it. But let's get serious, Dee. We also wanted to talk about social services, didn't we?
Yeah, so I'm big on social services. And I just think that overall, as a country, as the world, we can do so much better with social services, right? You know, just to overall better meet the needs of the people that they're designed to help.
Yeah.
Right? Because social services are for the people. For instance, let's look at Planning Parenthood, not the organization Planned Parenthood, right? But when you're Planning Parenthood, there's a constant battle with Roe versus Wade, longstanding issue. Why can't we get it right? Why are we still here again in 2022 having that same conversation? Let's look at the medical coverages, mental health, right? those, in my opinion, and probably a lot of other people's opinion, are outdated. Those services, insurance companies' policies, right? Are they really covering our medical issues today? Are we covered comfortably? You pay insurance, you're supposed to have some layer of protection and measures to feel confident that if you get ill, you can go to the hospital, you can go to your doctor's office. But I don't know that that still, you know, is the mindset anymore, even having insurance. And that's a problem. We're not keeping up with our programs. The mental health issue, are we keeping up with that in our society? There are a lot of new mental illnesses that have surfaced. We all can point fingers and partly say, yeah, there's social media that's causing this and that. Or, you know, we work 24 hours, 7 days a week. We don't have a good quality work-life balance. And there's the environment and there's the food we eat, the processed foods. And we can go on and on and on and on about some of the issues that are causing the medical needs to be reassessed in terms of its coverage, as well as the mental health component, right? We're just not where we were 20, 30 years ago. And so, meaning we need to look at those social service programs that are designed, again, to support the people, to provide enough resources to address the rapidly rising mental health issues and disparities and finding plausible solutions.
Yeah. And those are all really big tankers to try and turn around. And it's a challenge for people who work in those departments, in those agencies. They're so passionate, and yet they're operating as if their hands are tied behind their back. It's a shame that more leaders in those situations can't take on a rebel mindset, because quite frankly, I think this is what we need. It took a pandemic to get the pharmaceutical industry to move faster when it comes to testing for vaccines that actually have a benefit. So maybe it will take some other kind of crisis to turn things around. And then when you add in things like homelessness and educational inequality, and everything interacts and overlaps, it's really difficult to get to some of those solutions without breaking things apart. So it's a conundrum, Dee.
You know, Elia, that brings me to a thought of something my mom always shared with growing up. And she would always say this, you know, they teach us 5 different senses: seeing, hearing, touch, taste, and smell, right? Did I get those 5 right? Those are 5 that we were always taught. And she said, unfortunately, and you may know where I'm going with this, unfortunately, we often gloss over the 6th sense, and that's common sense.
Yeah.
We often gloss over that one. And that's important that we don't do that anymore. And a lot of times in these instances, we know that we're looking at data sets and we're trying to analyze and come to outcomes or produce results. But unfortunately, if you're looking at the wrong data sets to begin with, you're probably going to get skewed results. So that's what we find a lot of spinning our wheels on. And it becomes, after a while, it becomes a business. The medical industry is a business. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they're in it, you know, for their bottom line as well. Yeah. And so those are some of the key things we need to look at. Right. When we look at the prison system, it's a business. Yep. Mm-hmm. And so these are things that we have the common sense to know that they're businesses, but we have not addressed, again, the data sets that apply to why we keep seeing the same outcome and results.
I'm glad that you mentioned data, because when it comes to innovation, when you look at the process of innovation and you're identifying what the problem is that you're trying to solve, it's important to have the data around that. So knowing the data helps you to figure out what your goal is. Yeah. You might be going into a brainstorming session. You might be aiming for creating, you know, the next innovation. But if you don't know what your goal is, then how will you know you've got something innovative? And so that data is crucially important, as well as talking to your customers. And your customers in these kinds of agencies are the people that need the help the most. I sincerely doubt that enough people are having those kinds of conversations or diving in deeply enough to the data. And maybe data is easier than having conversations, so I may be wrong on that score.
Okay, yeah, right. You're probably not wrong on that score. So let's talk about building better communities. We all want to associate with being in a good community, right? And so with creative problem solving and innovation, again, a lot of times it just doesn't exist in a business setting. But with mixed use properties, for instance, where you live, work, and play, now we're looking at the quality of life again. That makes sense. Maybe not simple solutions, but they're solutions to help move us in the right direction. So with this mixed use property piece, and I'm a former realtor, and I remember when that was becoming a trend and becoming a big deal across the country in particular communities, right? You live, you work, you play within your community. No one wants to drive 2 hours to commute to work one way every day. That's taxing on anybody.
Yeah.
And so anybody that, you know, would say this is great, you know, I'm not sure how many people would, but I don't think that's the ideal, right? But now when you're looking at walkable communities, open leisure spaces, city parks in your community, a transit network that also takes into account pedestrians and cyclists, families, kids, right? I mean, how often do you see kids outside playing anymore?
Yeah.
It's a rarity. And that, to me, we're taking away the basic common sense survival skill sets. You know, you need outdoor air. Kids need to run. They've got lots of energy. They need that time and space. But we got into this arena where we're taking our kids to the, not the gym, but, you know, all of these activities, and we've worn them out with activity after activity. In fact, we wear ourselves out as parents, you know, because everything is scheduled and you got this day and practice that day and this, that. When I was growing up, we went outside and we roamed and we played.
Yeah, me too. And those communities are little microcosms of continuous improvement and innovation. And it's done the right way because they involve the community. They talk to people who live there. And that's why those initiatives are so successful. So thanks for bringing that example in, Dee. Well, I've enjoyed a conversation and I think it's time for us to make our exit.
Thank you. I've also enjoyed this conversation, Elia, so much so that I think you pointed out another segment that we will probably give great consideration to, and that's stakeholders. Mm-hmm. I'm so looking forward to having a conversation around that and many other things that we discussed here today. But want to thank our listeners for tuning in and listening to the Innovators Game Changers podcast. Please comment below, like, and subscribe. We've created a podcast designed to help you make the case for innovation and unpack the common factors that inhibit and advance innovation. You'll listen to expert guests share the why and how of their path to innovation and challenges along the way. Hosted by Elia Harris and Dee Claxton, delivering their insights in entrepreneurship, business development, and innovation. Keep informed about innovation today and help us help you drive the case for innovation for the betterment of the world. Bye for now.
Bye.